All right, fan pregame Friday night, final day of a great week here. Huge day in Paris, lots to go through. We'll start with Mark Hess of CBC Sports, Canadian Volleyball Hall of Famer, who just called that incredible, incredible final in women's beach volleyball, the gold medal game. Canada fell just short, but still their best ever performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time it ever went to a third final set there in a women's gold. So they went right to the end and they just fell short.
Indeed, they did. It's kind of a sad day because it's the last time we'll be pre-gaming Olympic coverage. Mm. But to put a bow on things, we'll have someone who's been anchoring Olympic coverage in Julie Stewart-Bank. She'll come on at 6:30, help us tie things up.
Lots to go through today. Jays back in action against the A's tonight, 7 p.m. That's on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan. It's also Harry Potter night at the ballpark.
Mm.
You a Harry Potter guy?
I am not. I know you are, though. I can just feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen any of the movies.
I was right in peak Harry Potter. Like, growing up, it was, I would go to the bookstore, get the book the first day it came out, and I'd be reading it, and it probably take me less than a day, and I'd be waiting for the movies. Like, I was a big Harry Potter girl.
Mm.
A Gryffindor, of course.
A Harry Potter head.
You're more of a...
Again, I'm surprised you're not in
Hufflepuff
line.
You're a Hufflepuff, for sure.
I don't know what that means, but we've officially buried the lead here because the men won the 4x100 meter relay race in stunning fashion. 50-1 odds.
Honestly,
to win
incredible.
Going in the race.
Incredible.
And I know, betting, maybe against the Olympic spirit in some ways, but that just shows you and illustrates how remarkable the accomplishment was. And it's not because there was a bunch of faults or people fell, and I know there was some trouble from the Americans on the handoff, but Canada just went out there and won it. And it kind of... It changes the way I feel about the entire
Good.
Olympics.
You're getting
but
a
I think
bit
more than
sad.
That, more than that, I think it changes the way we feel about Andre DeGrasse's legacy. Now tied for the most medals ever, most decorated Olympian if you weight golds heavier than silvers and bronze, which I think we should. It's an unbelievable kind of last stand at these Olympics for Andre DeGrasse. We'll see what the future holds. But wow, it kind of changes things for him and for Aaron Brown, too, who was on that relay team, now has a bronze, a silver, and a gold all in these relays. So we've been all over the relays now for 12 years, I guess 8 years. But awesome to see a surprise and remarkable moment from Canada.
No, they shocked the world.
On the second to last day.
They shocked the world. They came out there and just ran with heart. Like, no expectations were for them to win, maybe to medal if all things went extremely well. Andre DeGrasse dealing with injury. He had an incredible anchor on that final stretch. Like, it was actually like maybe my favorite moment of the entire Olympics. And there's been a lot of moments, but watching that, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about what they went through. The amount of people that probably counted them out, the doubt, even saw the clips circulating. And I know you can poke fun at Noah Lyles, but you know, saying Canada, who, and they just went out there and did their thing. And we should be so, so proud. And I think you're right about the Andre DeGrasse legacy, whether this is his last Olympics or not. Like, I think we could make that decision even easier for him, whether you want to go back and defend it or you want to hang it up where you are, tied with Penny. But the most medals in Olympic history in men's sprints and relays goes like this. Bolt, 8. DeGrasse, 7.
It's crazy.
Like, that is our guy.
It almost illustrates that picture from Rio,
yes,
where they're looking at each other smiling and Usain Bolt is just a couple footsteps ahead of him. It is pretty remarkable how things turn out. The one thing that I didn't like about it, though, because they were on the outside lane where you can't really gauge exactly where they are.
You were kind of surprised when it was getting down on that final stretch. You're like, we are ahead.
You could tell at some point, yeah, they're ahead before it got to DeGrasse. But because it played out that way, you don't know where the race was won, right? Because sometimes you can see it, right? You can see Summer McIntosh make up a length in a relay, and there you have it. That's how Canada won the medal. I don't know where it happened. I don't know if it happened on the handoffs. Maybe we can get an expert to talk about it next week or with Julie Stewart-Binks later. But it's a little different when you're on the outside lane, and they just stayed ahead the entire time, which is, again, remarkable and quite an accomplishment for that group.
So with today, and we're going to get to Mark Hess in just a minute here, the women win silver. We are tied for 24 medals, which ties the
volleyball team.
Yes. So they win a medal, which means right now we have 24 medals, Canada, which ties our most ever at a non-boycotted Olympic Games. 24 was where we were in Tokyo 3 years ago. So right now, we end the Olympics with 24 medals, but there's still more athletes to compete. We went through it. We've got canoe, sprint, men's 800 meter and 5,000 meter, women's 4x400 meter breaking. I also watched some breaking today. We have to talk about that later. Breaking, which we are one of the favorites. Artistic swimming, we're doing well in. Brooke is still golfing. She has to have a baller day tomorrow, but stranger things have happened. Marathon, cycling, both men's and women's. So if we get one more medal, we hit 25. It's been a really successful Summer Olympics already, but this could be like a historic one for Canada. And I think it's crazy how one day can change kind of the vibe you're feeling. We've had lots of lows at this Olympic Games. We know that, the disappointment. But you watch those guys win the 4x100. None of them got a medal in the individual sprint. And they just ran like a team. And it's like they had this magical moment. I don't know how to put it into words. A good thing I don't call these things. I would have been like, whoa, win.
And a good reminder, it's not how you start with drones and scandal and controversy and
the like. It's how you finish.
It's how you finish, and you're finishing ahead of the Americans and South Africans, the Great Britons, and everybody else who was involved in that relay race. And I guess we're one step behind the Brazilians in beach volleyball, but that's okay. We digress. Canada has finished these games strong. And erase the memory, I guess, of what was a very difficult start.
Okay, so we were golden, we were silver today, and Marquise joins us from CBC in the Canadian Volleyball Hall of Fame. Of course, himself been a part of this entire journey. Mark, we appreciate you jumping on, especially right after a big and exhausting call. I'm sure that one went into three sets. Just tell us about what you just witnessed, the Canadian women winning silver in a very close match, and the moment underneath the Eiffel Tower. Like, just, it was pretty beautiful.
Well, first of all, we got the best venue of all the venues at the Olympics. It's been a lot of Instagrammable moments, let's put it that way. But history, you know, Canadians have never made the gold medal final at the Olympics. My partner John Chile and I won the bronze back in 96. That was 28 years ago. So we've been milking that medal for almost three decades now. So it's about time we had an upgrade in a medal. Melissa and Brandy, they fought hard today, but the Brazilians, number one seeds, just have dominated the last two seasons. Definitely a little bit more formidable today on the sand.
Yeah, but it didn't look like they were fishes out of water by any stretch of the imagination. It looked like Canada could have had that at several points in the match, but the Brazilians do prevail. We'll get to that in a second, but I do want to ask you, because you mentioned the venue, what's the coolest venue you competed at? Because I know maybe the Eiffel Tower, not in the background, but surely some Instagrammable moments, there wasn't Instagram back then, but Instagrammable moments nonetheless. Where's the best venue you competed at?
Well, name a country. I played a tournament there, it seems. I think, you know, I'm a bit old school, but I still think beach volleyball should be played on a beach, at Bondi Beach in Sydney, in the games in Australia. That was an incredible setting. You know, the sand, it truly was squeaky clean. I'd walk through it and it would squeak. It would, you know, it was just like this perfect sand. So I would say that's been the best venue. But I played on some strange spots, a helicopter pad under Angel Falls. It's the fjords in Norway. Mountains, the Swiss Alps in Switzerland, of course, playing in California, and where probably the birthplace of the sport was. That was pretty special.
There you go. Want to see the world? Pick up a beach volleyball.
Play beach volleyball. Absolutely.
Clearly, I'm playing in rinks. Should have been out on the sand. Okay, so let's talk about this accomplishment for Brandy and Melissa. Let's talk about the way they got there, because the lucky loser bracket, the grit, and I was watching your pregame. And you talked about the grit that it would take to get to this point. And you had a little bit of grit yourselves when you won bronze. But to go through the adversity that they did and have to play so many elimination games, to push themselves to the limit, and then once again in that final set for the gold medal game, like that shows their level of unity, that teammate, that camaraderie, that they could do it. But it wasn't an easy journey for them.
Well, no, they really struggled in pool play. They went 1-2 despite being the favorites in the pool. So definitely their backs up against the wall. They were playing elimination matches early on in the tournament. And the lucky loser, it's never happened that actually on the men's side it did, but on the women's side, never had a lucky loser battle their way through all the way to the gold medal final. And they had to upend the number two seeds from USA in that first round, the round of 16, after their lucky loser. So, they just found a way to rise to the occasion right at the right moment, even in the semis against the Swiss team. They faced match point, but they came up big with some blocks and put the pressure on at the right times.
So you know these athletes well. Tell us a bit about them, because, you know, like many things at the Olympics, we're learning these athletes and you know, getting to know them for the first time. They showed that grit. They came, they did it the hard way to get this silver medal. What about them made that possible?
Well, yeah, we do know them. I know them. I knew Melissa since she was a little tight. Her dad, Hernan Humania, was our coach in two of our three Olympic games in Atlanta when we won bronze, and then again in Sydney where we lost a tight quarterfinal to the Brazilians. And so she was around our practices. She, you know, dad dragged her to tournaments and practices, and she'd always be, she grew up on the beach. So it comes to her naturally. Brandy was more of an indoor player and came to the sport a little bit later, but she's incredible. And, you know, the two, what makes them so good was just that compatibility. Mm. And for years, you know, the on the women's side, they were playing musical chairs for the last 4 or 5 years, lots of different partnerships. Mm-hmm. But finally, they got together and on the court and off the court. I think the volleyball community knew this was the right fit before they did. And then they got together and they've been amazing. And I think that's a big part. Their compatibility and their grit was a big part of why they won Olympic silver.
So what makes a good partnership then? Because you mentioned it, they weren't partners before. There were different teams and they weren't together. And I guess a lot of that is strategic. Maybe some of it is more than that and more behind the scenes than we really know. But if you are trying to create the best possible partnership, is it body type, athletic type, skill sets intertwining? Like, what makes a good beach volleyball pair?
Well, you have to have a certain skill set that is compatible. So in Brandy and Mel's case, Brandy's kind of a bigger blocker type that can, you know, put up a big block and put pressure up at the net. And Melissa is more agile and mobile and you know, a little bit shorter and faster and reads the play really well. So she's a great defender in the backcourt. So you need that compatibility, and helps that one's a right-handed. Mm-hmm. Melissa's right-handed. Brandy's left-handed. So, you know, playing left side and right side, that helps as well. But you really, I think what makes them the best partnership is just their personalities. They just are, they're like sisters. They approach the game with the same, you know, joy and passion. They have this holistic approach, but they want to win. They're gritty. And I think that they just play the game right. And that similarity, sometimes, you know, it's good to have one partner that's, you know, this, you know, the yin and yang, almost the opposites, and they cover all the bases. But in this case, they just get along well. And some of those, you know, you spend a lot of time with your partner. Long stints in Europe where most of the tournaments are. So if you don't get along, you're in trouble. So chemistry, I think, is the biggest contributor.
Yeah, you got to be okay with hugging your partner, right? There's a lot of hugs in beach volleyball. If you disdain, like, you have disdain for your partner, those hugs are going to be miserable.
You know what? That's pretty new school. I might have hugged my partner when we won a tournament.
Okay.
What about
John and I were, you know, the old hand slap once in a while.
Yes.
That's about it. But, you know, nowadays, you know, you connect after each rally and you know, recover well and look at each other in the eye. It's new school.
Well, you're talking too, right?
Like,
you're
work for some.
Like, hey, that worked. Let's do that again. Or let's serve it to this girl. Like, that's part of it, right? It's not just physical contact.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Communication is key. There's no coach. So you definitely have to be, you know, addressing what's happening on the court, making decisions and talking between rallies. Absolutely. On side changes and the timeouts. That's a big part of it. And that's why, you know, players like Brandy and Mel, and they're already in their 30s, still, you know, physically amazing, but, you know, that experience and that coaching volleyball IQ plays a big role too.
What about talking smack? What was going on there at the end of the game? I saw Brandy, look in Brandy's eyes. I backed away from the television screen because
dust up.
There was something going on there.
Stand up.
I was getting ready for a little rumble. It's normally a non-contact sport, but the gloves almost got dropped there. You know what happened? after Melissa hit the ball out, mm-hmm. Anna Patricia, who's pretty intimidating, yes. the tall Brazilian blocker, she just kind of gave that smug look at Brandy, like, you know, we got this.
Uh-oh.
And I don't think Brandy appreciated that, and rightly so. You know, you're not allowed to really taunt through the net. It's an actual rule. And you know what? You're not going to let your opponent intimidate you. And she stood up to it. Good for her. And then, you know, Duda and Melissa were trying to make amends, but the other two were just going at it. I was enjoying it.
Yeah, you might have got to call like a boxing match in the middle of a underneath the Eiffel Tower type thing.
Not qualified to do that, but I was, you know, kind of chuckling inside.
That's funny. We're talking to Mara Keys, of course, CBC, and then just called Canadian women's silver medal. I want to ask you about this journey for the last 30 years that you've seen. I know it's been a while since you won that medal. You mentioned it's time to upgrade it, but the sport itself and how it's evolved, you were a part of putting it on the scene, and now it's becoming something that Canadians are going to be great at and going to dominate. So what has it been like for you to watch this journey and now get to call it? It must be a nice time to reflect.
Well, yeah, it's been disappointing, to be honest, because when we first, when we won that medal, I saw what it did, you know. Obviously, we created a bit of a fan base, not for us necessarily, but for the sport. It, you know, it put the sport on the map when we won the medal, and it was first introduced to the Olympics. And all of a sudden, you know, beach courts were popping up at community centers and schools and across the country, even down at Ashbridges Bay in Toronto. Which at some point in the 80s, there was no beach volleyball allowed. They've turned Ashbridges Bay. They've, you know, the city installed 100 courts. And if you go down there anytime on the weekends or on the weeknights, it's jam-packed. So I saw what it did the first time we won a medal. Now, you know, we had a pro tour. There was corporate sponsorship. You know, we had our 15 minutes. But then after Sydney, when we finished fifth, lost in the quarterfinals, it all went away. And for the last, you know, 20 years, well, 16 years before we really got a team that was competitive again, coming into Rio, we had a couple of good teams, Jamie Broder and Christina Valius and Sarah Pavin and Heather Bansley. And then in the next 4 years, you know, Melissa and Sarah really, you know, got to the forefront, world number ones. They didn't quite get to the podium Tokyo, sorry, drew a blank there, but and now we're on the podium. So, you know, the evolution, I really am excited about what's next for beach volleyball and what this medal will do. Absolutely, we're going to get some more fans. We're going to inspire another generation of young athletes, which is amazing. But I'm hoping that corporate Canada and, you know, maybe some funding will, you know, recognize this is pretty awesome sport. It shouldn't just be celebrated and watched every 4 years. This, you know, let's create a spot where our top athletes like Melissa and Brandy, they don't have to travel over to Europe all summer or down south. Let's get some, you know, international matches here. Let's get some investment in the sport here. So here in Canada, we can enjoy it.
There you go. We'll cut that clip and we'll send it to the people that matter. How different do you think your experience was in 96, winning a bronze medal, winning the match to get bronze, compared to what the girls went through today? Obviously, there's going to be some disappointment, but there's a silver medal on the other side. But I do wonder how it might have affected how you approach this match. I mean, you guys, you have the possibility of coming up completely short, whereas there is that safety net. You can just answer from your standpoint, I guess, the thrill of being able to win a match that determines whether or not you're going home with something, was that a nervous energy? Was that an excitement? What were your feelings leading into a do or die for an Olympic hardware?
Well, absolutely. Some people are better under pressure. They need that pressure, that do or die, backs against the wall. And you know, part of me thinks, you know what? Brandy and Mel played so well with that pressure. And when it was let off, and yeah, we're definitely guaranteed silver, Canada's best ever result. I wonder if that played a factor, but you know, they fought well, and I think they really talked about and wanted to get gold here. So I'm not sure how that played into their psychology, but I do remember this on the bus ride back after we won the bronze. You know, all three medal winning teams, they got kept behind because we had to do some doping tests and things like that. And it was late at night. Just the three teams got to drive home in the bus to back to the village. And the gold medalists, they were all excited. Us bronze medalists, we were all pumped up. It was the silver medalists who just lost that were slumped and, you know, just disappointed. So, yeah, you know, definitely a little bit of disappointment probably for the whole community here in Canada who was hoping for gold, and definitely for Brandy and Mel. But I'm sure once they have a moment to reflect, they'll be pretty pumped to step on the podium for Canada's best ever result, Olympic silver.
Yeah, they should. Last one for you, Mark. I got to know, how glorious is retirement for a beach volleyball player? Like, do you go down to Cancun and just school everyone on the beach? Like, what do you do? Like, if you're a hockey, if you're A-list, you can't just go on vacation and dust some 12-year-old kids. Like, you got to be able to have that in your repertoire. What's retirement like for a beach volleyball player?
Well, it's not tennis or golf. We still got to work. Got to get a 9-to-5 job. That's for sure. No retirement plan for a beach volleyball player. But I have been known to rough up a couple of those recreational courts when I go to Florida and California.
There you go.
Good fun. I play mostly with my kids who aren't kids anymore. And the shoulders not doing so well. So.
Crunching.
I play a lot of hockey now. That's my competitive fix.
There you go. Okay, amazing. Well, this was great. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. I know today and this whole trip has been probably a bit of a whirlwind getting to call all this, but glad to have you on after Canada's best ever result, as you mentioned, and enjoy the remaining days of the Olympics, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me on. Good fun.
Yeah, thanks so much. Mark Hees, Canadian Volleyball Hall of Famer, bronze medalist, and called it for CBC there.
Beach sports are underrated in how difficult they are. Running in sand.
100%.
Having to do, like, the thing you normally do on flat, stable ground.
I was telling you, just jumping in sand. Like, it's not the same. Running, when I play spike ball in the sand, it's nice because you can dive and it's, like, more dramatic, but it's not easy. The quick feet, they go away.
I like the pool volleyball on vacation.
Oh, that's
a little
nice.
Safer, a little cooler.
It's nice.
A little less difficult on the body.
So a silver for the Canadian women in beach volleyball today. They were close. It was an awesome game. Obviously, we watched today's 4x100, which was mind-blowing. A lot of really amazing accomplishments for Canada. I think we're feeling like we've turned this Paris Olympics around.
Sure.
Good.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think, again, it shouldn't hinge on one thing. Is it better unequivocally than it was in Tokyo? I don't know if it was. I think there's an argument. We can do some compare and some contrast, but
if we win more than 24 medals, let's say we get a medal in the upcoming events, there's about 8 more events that we're participating in. Roughly, we get one more medal. It's our best ever performance at a non-boycotted Olympic Games. Does that make it the best Olympics for Canada, or does it make it the events or the most medaled? Because there's some really miraculous wins scattered amongst Paris, and then there's some big, difficult defeats and some heartbreaking ones. But maybe this, like, my positive spin is I've learned a lot more about athletes that aren't in the core main sports, right? Whether that's soccer or basketball, where we definitely fell short. I think it's the beauty of the Olympics is a lot of this is amateur, right? It's it's non-professionals. It's not the people that are making millions and millions of dollars. It's those that are playing the sports or practicing their craft in things that we don't see every 4 years. So I think that I find that even more special at times when you see somebody win a medal in hammer throw and judo and some of and boxing, things that we weren't really going to be the stars in. I find beauty in that.
I think it's safe to say that a standard has been upheld for Canada. I don't think it's unequivocally better. It's not a step back like we've had in the last 20, 25 years where it's like, wow, what happened at this Olympics? Like, we haven't, well, this is certainly not the case. But yeah, there are some ups and some downs for sure. And again, it sounds like a little crass to the quality versus quantity thing, but the quantity's there. Mm-hmm. Is the quality the same? I mean, it's not really fair to like diminish a judo accomplishment compared to, you know, in Tokyo when an Olympic soccer team won. So I don't know. I think, you know, we're on par with where we should be. And I think everyone should be, you know, proud of the country. And if you're part of the delegation, you should be proud of the accomplishment.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We got 30 more minutes and possibly a surprise after the break. Producer Mike Gentile just told me a surprise might be coming. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on the Fan pregame.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan pregame, Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We got a direct line to the common denominator between the 96 gold and the 24 gold, and that is Glenroy Gilbert joining us, head coach of Athletics Canada and gold medalist. What's the party like in Paris? How's it going?
It's going well. Of course, as you can imagine, the guys are celebrating. They've been chasing this for a while, so it's good that it happened tonight.
I mean, you don't have to go into too many details, but how do you celebrate a 4x100 meter relay gold medal?
You know what? It's the victory lap that they took in the Olympic Stadium today is all the celebration, at least for now while we're here, that they're going to do. I mean, obviously, we're back home in a couple of days, but yeah, it's been good. They're over the moon considering, you know, the very narrow qualification that we had, they stepped up big today.
Okay, so tell us, Glenroy, we led off with this. We, you know, one of the trials or one of the problems with being on the outside lane, it's hard to tell exactly how this race was won. You're the coach, you know exactly how this race was won. How did Canada do this today?
Well, first off, these guys they're used to each other. I mean, it's when you have a small pool of athletes, they're very used to each other. So what we did was they got a little bit of rest. Again, it wasn't ideal, but they understood that, you know, I had a conversation with them the day, like I think it was yesterday. And I said, you guys have to decide how you want to leave the Olympic Stadium in Paris, because there's no guarantee that you're going to be in LA. There's no guarantee that I'll be in LA. So you have to figure how you want to leave, and how you want to leave is going to speak volumes to your careers as athletes, right? So we decided that what we would do is open up the exchange zone out in lane 9. It's no man's land. It's a difficult lane to run in. We opened up the marks. These guys hit all the marks. Andre finally got off the mark, which he didn't do in the heats, but he got it in the final. He took off, and once Brendan got the stick in his hand, we knew at that point it was over, because Andre was not going to get run down.
Against all odds, really. You mentioned it being in no man's land on the 9th lane. None of the guys had won an individual medal, and you're going up against everybody else that had better odds to win this race. Yeah. So what is it like before the race when they know all this and they say, screw it, we're going to go win gold anyway? Like, who's leading that conversation?
Well, first off, I lead the conversation, because what I try to do is make it perfectly clear to them that we're going to stick to fundamentals. Mm. Keep it simple. Like, my kids play soccer, and I hear their coach talk about simple. Keep it very simple. Do not try to reinvent the wheel. Do not try to do anything extravagant out there. Just remember, the relay running is a fundamental skill. We coach that all the time in our training camps, and I say, do not do anything more than what you need to do. Run your legs, set a good target, deliver the baton on target, and just run the hell out of the track. That's it. You don't have to do anything more than that. You don't have to get clever or try to be sneaky or anything through the zones. We just had to be on point.
So 7 medals now for Andre DeGrasse getting this gold here in Paris as part of this team. Can you attach the superlative for us on him, Glenroy? I mean, is it safe to say he's the greatest Olympian? Is he the greatest sprinter in Canadian history? Is that fair to even have that conversation? I mean, how would you describe his Olympic career and what Andre DeGrasse has done and accomplished on a track?
Yeah, I mean, definitely he is a maverick in a sense. He's a supernova, right? Here's a guy who's won 7 medals, and he knows how to win. He knows how to get up for the competition. These guys, the rest of the guys, you know, they rallied around him, and they know that if he's on the track with them and he's bought fully in to what's going on, all they got to do is get the stick in his hand, and he was gonna get the rest of it done. But make no mistake about one thing, okay? This relay race was done by all 4 of those guys, because they had to be. It couldn't be one guy, because in the past they wouldn't get to him in time. Most of the other teams would be in front, and then he'd have to chase them down. This time he got the stick out in front of everybody. Similarly to Worlds and Eugene, he got the stick out in front. So the other three guys have really stepped up and have been stepping up to give him the space he needs to do what he does.
So is this coincidence at all that Canada now, you know, bronze, silver, then gold? I mean, there may be athletes who are just as fast. There may be athletes and teams that are straight up faster. But the sum of the parts here with Canada, is there something about strategy? Is there something about the cohesiveness? Like, what separates Canada in these moments?
You know what? It's a bit of both those things, right? We have a strategic plan that we have with relays. There is also like the fact that these guys, it's a very small group. They've been running together for years. And if anyone has run relays before, they know that, you know, that group cohesiveness builds over time. And these guys are actually friends, right? And they've got each other's back, as you'd say, right? So if a guy doesn't really run as smooth a leg as we'd like, the other guy he's coming into will pick up that slack. So there has always been a connection with these guys. They know how to put it together when it counts. They know that there's a lot riding on them when they're about to run a 4x1 because of the history of the 4x1 in Canada and the fact that we were on teams that won Worlds and the Olympics in the past. They know it's a very rich history, and they want to do their part to add to that.
Can you let us know if you know any of the information behind that protest that was launched against Canada? Yeah. Obviously, it wasn't upheld, but it was a bit of a tense moment there for a minute.
Yeah. Well, what it was is this. It's like Brendan was coming off the turn, and what happens is Andre's supposed to run wide, but he was running more in the middle of his lane, which then kind of squeezed Brendan towards the inside lane line. But the reason it was upheld was Brendan had already given the baton to Andre, which makes him he's not in the race anymore. Now Andre has the baton, and the fact that he gave it to him before stepping on that line, it didn't matter. It was really a non-argument.
And last one for you, Glenroy. What's better, Saturday nights in Georgia or Friday nights in Paris?
You know what? I'll always say that Saturday night in Georgia is always better.
Well, it's not over yet.
We don't know how the night will end yet.
It's not over yet. It's still Friday night in Paris.
That's right.
Well, we appreciate you jumping on with us. Congratulations. Say congrats to everyone that was a part of the race, and Canada's very proud of them.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest. Glenroy Gilbert, a head coach of Athletics Canada, was a winner Saturday night in Georgia. Now part of the helping them get the Friday night in Paris win too.
I think probably the most rewarding coaching position would be this one, right? Because there's like real strategy and what happens out there in that race. It's 100 meters. Like, you know, just run your best race. That's all you can really say. But it feels like, you know, he had his fingerprints on that, which are pretty cool. So he should be just as excited as those four sprinters.
Before we bring in our final guest of Olympic coverage, I just wanted to bring up, I know you asked about, the handoff was really important, right? Canada did a great job. The Americans did not. We know that.
Yes.
Carl Lewis, obviously a legend, Carl Lewis, had a very interesting tweet. Quote, "It is time to blow up the system. This continues to be completely unacceptable. It is clear that everyone at U.S. Track and Field is more concerned with relationships than winning. No athlete should step on the track and run another relay until this program is changed from top to bottom." This is not the first time that they've had an issue with their handoff. They ended up being disqualified, and Canada just runs right by and continues. So it's that cohesiveness, it's the teamwork that Canada has, and maybe America is lacking.
Sure. I mean, it seems a little bit hyperbolic. Like, I'm no handoff or baton expert, but they didn't do it well.
Clearly, and that's the most important part, though.
I mean, I guess if they're choosing a guy who can't hand the baton off very well, then that's their problem, I suppose. But burning it to the ground feels
dramatic. A little maple syrup to stick it to their hands.
It was Carl Lewis, you said?
Yeah.
Did Andre DeGrasse move one medal ahead of Carl Lewis, I believe?
He did, yes.
All-time in track?
Andre DeGrasse has seven.
A little sour grapes there.
So, okay, let's pass the baton to our final guest of Olympic coverage. Julie Stewart-Banks joins us. JSB, what's going on?
I'm waiting for the baton. I'm in here in my dressing room
I've thrown it.
CBC.
Scott Russell's been placing it perfectly the entire Olympics.
He's been He's been making me kind of jump around for it sometimes, but I think we finally figured it out today. You know, Paris to Toronto, it's always a bit of a different ambiance. He's got a lovely Eiffel Tower behind him. I'm in a studio. It's just a little bit different, but I am a bit of a baton expert, not going to lie. Oh. Obviously, didn't go to the Olympics, but I have run track at university and was the anchor. And just like what we've heard from so many people say, how it's, you know, it's not just one guy, it's every single person together. Like that baton exchange used to haunt my nightmares because it was just like, it's just the timing of it where you put the tape when the third runner for me would say, go, and then stick. And like, you have to just trust when you hear stick that like you're going to grasp it. And like, sometimes you're going to grasp it and it's not going to be there. Like, you know, you just, it's like, like as Glenroy Gilbert was just saying, like the trust amongst those guys, knowing each other, knowing all their tendencies, they know exactly when to do it and when to not. And it's, I mean, we saw it. I mean, we saw it, the most crazy thing ever. I'm still, my mind is still blown seeing Canada atop that podium when they had come in and thinking, you know, this might be a bit of a difficult race for them. But then we all watched it. Donovan Bailey was in the studio with us, which was probably one of the more cooler things I've ever experienced in my life, is like watching him watch the 4x100. I was like, am I alive right now? And it was just really, really incredible. It's such a fantastic moment for Canada when things had kind of been, you know, especially with track, with no one really making it to the finals in a lot of stuff. It was just a great way to come out on top and a surprise medal in a way.
Yeah, I think it was the perfect, like, almost bookend. I know there's still another day, and I know you're probably counting down the hours, but a perfect way to end what was a very successful, but at times highs and lows at this Paris Olympics. We had a really great start with Summer, who was just like, being the story on every headline, that every time we heard you on CBC, it was, okay, summer this. And then we went through a bit of a weird period where expectations, we fell short in basketball and in soccer, and there was like scandal and it was, ugh, what's going on? And now we get this amazing story to conclude almost what is going to be maybe a record-breaking Olympics for Canada. So let's just zoom out for a second. Is this your biggest moment of Paris? Is this the moment that, you know, you'll take home and be like, wow, I can't believe that Canada did that?
Wow, great question. Let's also give some snaps to Brandi Wilkerson and Melissa Humana-Paredes, who just won silver for Canada, like under the most insane backdrop of the Eiffel Tower and the lights. I was thinking, is this like the best venue experience ambiance ever? I mean, I can't even imagine how nervous you would be under all that. I mean, any Olympian, obviously, of course, and then millions of people watching. But you're right in the fact that it was day 10 that Canada won no medals, because we remember it vividly. Mm-hmm. And then it picked up a bit more. But there have been sort of surprise medals too, right? Like with rugby sevens for the women's. Like that feels like a month ago that happened. And same with Summer McIntosh. But I will say my moment of the games was watching Canada play Germany and seeing Signe Butler, who was calling play-by-play, go to three separate events during the soccer match where, like, that's insane. Even I'm just saying that out loud, where she had to throw it to, there was a hydration break. And, you know, in soccer, there's like, you can't leave the game. Like it's always on. So she threw it in the hydration break to I believe it was like the men's butterfly thing. No, it's Summer, maybe Summer McIntosh. I mean, there were three different races she threw it to. And then it came back in time because two German players cramped up, that then like there was a goal kick. And I remember being like, wow, like my mind was blown with just watching everything come together. And you see just how, you know, people at home don't understand or haven't, you know, just seen the curtain pull back, being like, okay, we've got, you know, women's soccer on a huge game for Canada at the exact same time that Summer McIntosh is going for gold, the exact same time that the women's 100 meter is on. And it's like, okay, how do we do this? It's really like doing surgery. And so that's like my biggest thing, is how this place has handled it. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for certain. And I think that everyone here has just really done such a good job. I'm obviously just like parachuting in here for the summer for the Olympics, and it's been really fun, as it's my the town where I currently am, as my Moira Rose voice. And it's been great, but it has been like various chapters, the summer chapter, the sort of lull chapter, then the surprise medal chapter, and like all this kind of stuff. So it's been a ride.
Very cool. Medals for the athletes and some medals for the broadcasters as well. When it comes to legacy, I mean, Summer's just kind of building hers, and other athletes have surprised us, but there's still runway there. And Andre DeGrasse could show up in Los Angeles in 4 years, I'm sure. But if anyone put like the finishing touch on how they're going to be viewed and celebrated in history, it feels like it should be Andre DeGrasse. I mean, where does he rank now after picking up that gold and running the final leg for Canada's relay team today?
Like rank where? Like rank with Wayne Gretzky or like Mark Messier?
Sure. Olympians, just Canadian athletes
Christine
in general.
Sinclair. He's up there. I mean, he's arguably one of the greatest athletes that Canada has ever produced. And we are so lucky to have been able to claim him as our own and to have seen him run in Rio and Tokyo and here. And to, when everyone had obviously been like, oh, kind of counted him out, and he was struggling to kind of get back into the finals and thinking maybe you're not going to medal in these games. And then to have a run like that, to have a final leg like that in the men's 4x100, which is such a marquee event. I mean, for me, and if I were him, I'd be like, I think that's how we end this chapter. Because if I come back, like, who knows what happens? But then again, I would have no idea what it feels like to be an Olympian, sadly. And so maybe like you want to keep it going, right? Even if maybe you don't feel like you felt back in Rio. I've been trying to think about that with athletes. It's like, why stop the party if you can still keep it going? Even if maybe you aren't going to win, you still want to do it. Mm-hmm. So then you look at their motivation, right? Then, so, and him obviously having trained and been in LA and who knows, you know, yeah, obviously have to qualify. It's a long way away. I mean, who knows what even's going to happen next week. But I think that it's a beautiful way to at least end this Olympics for him. I'm so happy for them. Watching them on the podium, I took a video of it, and I was just like, wow, I felt like a mom. Like, I'm like, I'm so happy for these guys getting this experience. You feel that, the empathy for that moment. And that's the Olympics right there.
No, I know. I've cried at random people from countries I didn't know existed over the last 2 weeks.
She has.
I really have. Okay, last one for you, JSB, because I know it's been a long day for you. What sport have you seen that, you know, maybe surprised you, or a moment? Did you catch breaking? Did you catch any of the new sports? Something that you were like, wow, this is really cool, because I had the same thing with watching our teams do judo or other events that I never really focused in on. So was there a moment that surprised you with Paris and all the lore that it was?
Well, as someone who had to keep Canada updated on all of the events that they likely missed while watching other events, I have seen quite a few things I never, ever thought I'd witness before. And I think, I mean, gosh, I think this is not a surprise, but artistic swimming, I think, is very underrated in terms of how difficult that would be to do all of that while also looking like all of that, like all the performance with it and like holding the breath, and like they're underwater for what feels like an eternity holding someone up, and you're just like, oh no, I'm stressed out about this right now. But then they're up there like perfect, and it's amazing. But one thing I did learn, I didn't know this before, in water polo, when they go to the penalty box, they got to tread water.
Crazy.
You don't get to like,
crazy.
I was like, oh,
is no that, bench in the penalty box.
No bench in the penalty box. You got to tread water that whole time. So I found that interesting. But I mean, I've seen, I watched some of the breaking today, and I look forward to seeing Phil Wizard tomorrow breaking. I'm sad about Suni Choi, the Estee Lauder director turned Olympic break dancer.
Pretty cool.
Who didn't win today. But I'd say, I mean, fencing even too. I was in the fencing club when I was in grade 3, just I don't know if I want to put that out there or not, but it was so cool to see the strategy behind that too, right? Because this happens like so fast in a millisecond with trying to get your sword.
As part of the club, you should know.
The sword, I guess. I don't know. The fence.
I'm like, I don't even know what day it is. I'm like, what is it? I'm like, when was fencing? Like, you know what it is like years working ago. In Olympics. It's
Yeah,
it feels like it was the last Olympics and it was like yesterday or something like that. But that was cool to see Canada with that. So yeah, this, I would say though, there's events I'd say I will not do that. Mm. And I found a lot of those.
Yes.
Like diving, that backwards diving. That's my big one.
No, thanks. I can barely jump off like a rock into the water without getting scared. Yeah. So I gained a lot of admiration for a lot of athletes because they do something incredible for sure. And as well as you, like, you've been killing it. We've seen you every day. We've been watching.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Enjoy. Finish strong. And it's going to be probably an emotional
stick the landing.
Yeah, stick the landing. But with Scott Russell and his sign off, I know it'll be an emotional one around the studios in general. So soak it all in. And thanks for coming on with us, Julie. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. And I'll take it all in because you know what it's like with an Olympics. Feels like a grind. And then when it's over, you miss every single second of it.
Thanks, guys. Keep on going. That's Julie Stewart-Binks. FCBC Sports been doing the updates for Paris 2024.
Yeah, won't be passing the batons tomorrow. You'll be passing the Kleenex boxes.
Yeah, it's getting to the end.
An emotional one.
Getting to the end for Scott Russell's
final sign-off.
We're going to be tuned right in to see that.
The last of Paris.
Yeah, but he's under the Eiffel Tower. It's scenic. It's perfect.
So. It's be emotional nonetheless.
Bon voyage and très bien.
And all that.
Okay, quickly, because we've been very Olympic focused. Blue Jays in action against the A's tonight. A team they are better than.
Yeah.
So I'm betting the Blue Jays to win tonight. They're going to beat up on the Oakland Athletics. It's a -150 on the money line, but it's they've had some big wins over the stretch. They took care of some of the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, and 2-3.
Jose Berríos on the mound, who's our guy. It's Harry Potter night at the ballpark. Yep. So let's see who's
got wizard,
something up their sleeve.
Mitch Spence, on the mound for the Oakland Athletics, started a 3-game series. We agree that Spencer Horowitz has the most Harry Potter name out of all Jays?
Yes, I think so.
Horowitz?
Spencer Horowitz.
There you go. The NBO National Bank Open continues tonight. Coco Gauff will be out there.
I'm going tomorrow, so I need her to win so I can see her.
Oh, she'll be back to back?
Well,
okay, so there you go.
Won't they play every other
Coco's
day?
-500 tonight, so won't be betting her. Well, you could add her to parlays if you really wanted it to. But yeah, National Bank Open continues on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 360 tonight. I'm going to the main event, though, I guess, of the Olympics tomorrow. Mm. We'll close things up with Olympic basketball. USA, after yesterday's remarkable comeback, and host France. Mm-hmm. France and USA will play in the women's side as well.
Double France victory.
We were looking at the France parlay, and it was like...
It's like almost 80-1.
A million to one.
It's never going to happen. I'm sorry.
You could just... It's basically a lottery ticket.
Wouldn't that be pretty cool, though, for France?
It would be very cool.
If you're a believer in, like, storybooks, that's what happens. But that is just so outrageous.
Which one do you think has a better chance?
I mean, the American women and the American men are like basically undefeated in the last.
Yeah. American women don't lose at all, though.
I don't know.
So
I feel like it's going to upset anybody.
The men's basketball team almost lost for the United States yesterday. So I would take the men, although the men are bigger favorites, I believe.
They are slightly bigger.
But I don't care. I'm picking France +16. That's too many points. Too many points in an Olympic final.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be some fatigue setting in. It's all the old guys playing all the minutes for the USA. I don't know if it's going to be like in a miraculous comeback again, but I like France to keep it at least competitive so we have an exciting watch to close out the Olympics.
I like France on the spread in both games. Let's keep it close. Keep the France crowd
a different version of the
France-France
parlay.
Yeah.
Just take the points.
Take the points.
They're offering us 32 total points. Just take them.
Favorite moment of the Olympics. You have 10 seconds.
Gilles' win. Gilles' goal.
That
to go 3-0.
Pretty sweet. That was a comeback for Canada. Summer's hat trick of golds.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Hard to beat a hat trick of gold medals.
I've never got a hat trick of anything. So go, Summer, go. That was a fun week. A couple weeks of Olympic stuff. When we come back, we'll be baseball mania.
Oh, we're going to look ahead to hockey and football. Right. We're getting to the end of summer.
Enjoy the weekend, everyone. We'll see you on Monday.